Foden Beat Show, a weekly podcast about the 2024 Star Wars Armada Vassal World Cup. Thanks for joining us.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Season 3 of the Foden Beat Show. We are super excited to be here for another season. Unfortunately, Rayleigh has left the show. She's kind of got moved on to different projects. I'm super grateful that she prompted me to do this in the first place, and that she helped out with all the things she did over the past 2 years, arranging guests, doing the technical back when we were doing it manually, and she would spend crazy amounts of time slicing bits of usable content together. So I'm sad to see her go, but super grateful that we had that opportunity to do that together. What I'm also super excited about is having two new co-hosts on the show. Now, in order to protect their identity, because AMG isn't so high on people using third-party tools and platforms to play their game, so I don't want anything to fall on them, so I'm going to be using some pseudonyms. But let me introduce the first new co-host, Mr. Big Parcel.
Hey, how's it going? I apologize in advance because I'm sick as a dog and probably sound awful. But yes, it's me, the Parcel.
Big Parcel. And also joining us this season is Sashimi.
Hello. It's me. I come from California, which is currently on fire. But I'm safe. I'm more safe from fires.
That's good. Yeah. Gosh, if anybody out there is in there and affected by that, our hearts go out to you. I can't imagine how rough that must be.
And I hear they're fleeing to LVO right now.
Oh, geez. I hope people are safe and their loved ones are safe. Things can be rebuilt and things, but people and loved ones can't. So thinking of you guys. Also, thinking ahead to the Vassal World Cup. I guess not ahead. I mean, it's on right now. So we're going to take some time. We're going to introduce our new, get to know our new co-host a little bit. I think a lot of people might already have a good idea of who these two are, but we're going to go down, we're going to try to dig a little deeper, get under their, behind the facade, find out who they really are and what they're really about. And then we'll get into some topic, some discussion around the VWC data, what this year's tournament looks like. And then we'll run through a quick recap of the game so far. And as always, I do a cutoff the day before our recording. So there may have been some games today that aren't going to be in my recap. I think Maki's got a shout out or two to add on to the end there. But my results are up until last night, which was January 8th. Sorry, I just got to pop up from Discord. I posted a teaser image in Discord, and people are like, "Wait, what's going on? What are you doing? Don't get our hopes up."
It's the hope that kills.
It is, right? So, Mr. Parcel, or should we call you Large Package?
You can call me whatever you want. I have no fear of the AMG repercussions. They know what I'm about.
I know what you're about. They know what you're about.
I mean, I've already been banned.
Exactly. You've been around the game for a while.
That is correct.
If you had to put a number to that, what would that number be?
How long has Armada been out? 8 years, I think, I want to say.
I don't know.
Because that plus a year, give or take.
You were in before the beginning.
Yeah. I worked worked is a strong term. I was a intern for FFG way back in the day under Gurnas, working for Armada when it was still just a baby project.
So we usually ask guests like, how'd you find the game? And clearly, I guess how did that work? Did the game find you, or did they go, hey, intern, work on this? Or
a little bit of both.
Was it a thing like, oh, can I work on that?
So nobody knew about Armada's existence at that point. And so I just went for like a generic, work for FFG style internship. And then as they got in, you kind of got delegated to stuff. And so like at the moment we were working on, it was Armada. It was Imperial Assault. It was... Oh gosh, I always get the name mixed up between it was the Arkham one with the app. I want to say it was Mansions of Madness.
Okay.
And Fury of Dracula. And so essentially we all float. Oh, and Forbidden Stars. And so we floated different projects, but then there would be like a quote unquote lead intern for each of the projects. And then the other interns would like float around and play test and stuff like that. And I got put on the Armada team.
Cool.
Yeah.
You are in part responsible for the game that we are, that we know and love.
It's true. And I think my absolute favorite little tidbit from that whole thing is how wrong we were about everything. So yeah, internal testing was hilarious. Like, I was so certain that slave turrets was the greatest thing ever and TRCs was shit. Like, why would you spend your own defense tokens? Dice add is good. And then it's so funny because when you look at like the trends of Armada, that's just like classic rookie 101. Like, the very first thing people think when they play Armada is, you know, like, dice add is good, right?
Yeah.
And as I, you know, started playing with people and getting my ass kicked by people who just started playing the game and learning and being like, oh yeah, everything I thought was wrong. And like, it's so fun watching new players go through that exact cycle.
Huh. And it does give you like a really unique perspective on the whole thing, because you've got that view from behind the mirror almost, right? Of like, I know the thoughts and the ideas that went into building this and that, and you know, that one worked out and that one didn't. And you know, now we have redundant shields.
You know what? Okay, so say what you want. I've been running redundant shields. It's a great upgrade. Put it on McThirties. Try it out. Give it a good time. Just saying.
Well, it's not the hottest take you've had, but it's pretty spicy.
I mean, you can ask, what are we calling them? Sashimi? Yeah.
I played against it. It was actually deeply frustrating bringing a MC30's hull zone down to zero shields and then just watching three more get put on by projection experts and redundant shields.
Yeah.
All right, folks.
I wouldn't say it was better than other upgrades out there, but it certainly was functional.
But it worked. Yeah.
But it worked.
Did a job.
Yeah. It's no slave turrets, though.
Slave turrets. Huh.
Yeah.
I did not know that one. And I mean, I know you, you know, you're into other games, you're into board games and such, but, and miniature games, but like you were a Star Wars fan before.
So I probably shouldn't say this out loud. I was actually a Star Trek guy. I played Attack Wing for the longest time and didn't really care about Star Wars. And ironically, it was working for Armada that brought me from one ship to the other.
Wow.
Yeah.
You were a human boarding trooper.
That's one way to put it.
Have you played in the VWC before?
Yeah, I really have a bad habit of I join and I play a couple games and then I get frustrated and then stop playing.
Right.
Yeah. So on that note, why don't we talk about the Vassal World Cup? Because clearly I have a very expert opinion on it to share.
Well, Mac has an expert opinion on everything.
Everything. But before we get to there, let's talk to our second co-host.
He's not real.
He is the third voice in my head.
I'm a figment of your imagination, Aaron.
Wow. All right. Well, at least you got a good voice for it.
Exactly.
And you haven't been playing as long. I mean, nobody's been playing as long as Mac, but how long have you been playing?
I had some ships purchased in box a little before COVID, but I actually started really playing during COVID. And when the TTS mod came out and it was sort of in its early days when you had like load everything by hand, like that was my first memories of playing Armada. And my first like actual competitive game was in a new player tournament that was organized, I believe, by Icebecker Ryan.
Ryan, yeah.
Oh, and yeah. I got tabled like turn two and I'm like, Oof. Whoa, this game is way more complicated than I thought it was. And that was the start of the descent.
Well, or the rise, because you've had quite a bit of success.
Yes. Yes. I think I'm entering my post success phase, my like early retirement days.
Right. Right.
But, I have done okay in some tournaments. I've never won a major, but I have gotten really close a lot of times.
Consistency is the key, right?
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. I made a lot of day twos. I make more day twos than I don't. So I'll hold to that.
There you go.
There you go. And you've been around Star Wars a long time too.
Yes. I don't know if anyone remembers my story from when I was on the Armada podcast, but I actually got into Star Wars from the books, from the Expanded Universe books. I had never seen the movies or any TV shows. And like when I was 10 or 11, my parents would just drop me off at the library and I would just read through the whole science fiction section at the library. And I thought these books were really cool. And so I read like basically the entire Expanded Universe book series, like all the different authors, all the Timothy Zahn stuff, all the weird Jedi books.
Yeah.
And then I started watching the movies. I'm like, whoa, this is really cool. And I've been a hooked Star Wars fan ever since.
Nice. Nice. Well, I'm super excited to have you guys on board. Looking forward to what we're going to do here and in the future. Little tease. But for right now, let's talk Vassal World Cup.
Yeah, absolutely. Why don't you run us through where we're at in the cup? I mean, we're about, I think,
about halfway almost through the pod phase.
You're not quite updated to this morning, but no. My spreadsheet says we are exactly halfway with 45 games played, 45 to go.
Wait, you got your own spreadsheet? What?
I got my own. Why? I've hacked into the main spreadsheet.
That's my shtick.
I got a quick question to represent all the people who don't know everything about Vassal and stats and all that jazz. Were the pods this year seeded, like they've been in the past?
They never are really seeded because it's hard.
Well, there was an arbitrary seeding where the folks that be set things.
Right. There's a pseudo seeding where they do pull sort of the experience of players, and then behind the scenes, the TOs will sort of put pods together. But it was kind of a smaller field this year. I think it's only 60 players.
Yeah.
So they didn't have a lot of room to be flexible within the time zones. The priority is getting 4 people in the same time zone or preferred time zone and putting them in a pod together.
Yeah. Yeah. And I know they've done their best. And I know I've fallen on both sides of that line because I'm having to be in a time zone with, you know, players like you two and Patrick and Maturin and Sam. So it can be pretty brutal, being a small fish on the West Coast, but you know, you learn a lot playing against people better than you. I've found that for sure.
It's the only way to learn.
Right? These West Coast pods are just absolutely brutal. I mean, even this year, they're just absolutely brutal.
Yeah.
They always are.
But yeah, you're right. They're, you know, I mean, the game being where it is, there's, I think it's fair to say there's been kind of a drop in, you know, tournaments attendance. Mm-hmm. And you see that in the World Cup too. It's down by about 25% from where it was last year. There was 88 people last year, and we're down to 60 this year. I mean, 60 is still a great number. I mean, the first World Cup I've got data for is 2020, and there was only 32. I think that was when they were still doing, like, you had to win your way in.
Yeah, then, isn't that back when there was invite tournaments and such?
Yeah. They had like a circuit, or not even a circuit, but like the winner of this one and the winner of that one and the winner of that one got in, kind of thing.
Oh, I wish we could bring that back and do some kind of circuit based cumulative event where it's like the Vassal World Cup and Endor and this and that and the other thing. I think that'd be dope.
Be the change you want to be in the world, Mac.
All right.
I mean, they do something similar in Texas, right? Where they have their three in-person tournaments, and they have their championship tournament where the...
And I think that's really cool.
Yeah.
Well, they do a top 8, essentially.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Across the champions kind of thing.
With all the champions.
Yeah.
Well, anyways.
Yeah, that's a good idea. I like it. So something we had noticed, and something that Mackie, you had pointed out when we were talking ahead of time, is the faction representation. So usually we're used to historically Empire Rebel being, you know, 1-2, 2-1, and then it had been Republic for a while, especially during the Commanderkin years, and, you know, Separatists, but, you know, a fairly distant third and fourth place for those two. This year, it's kind of been flipped around a bit, hasn't it?
Yeah, it's clearly Empire. Lots of Empire 134, lots of heavy Empire beat down fleets, and then Separatists with a 1 fleet lead over Rebels, 15-14, and Republic in distant fourth with only 8 fleets.
So, correct me if I'm wrong, but this is the same rule set, per se, as it was last World Cup, right? Like, nothing's changed?
Nothing's changed, no.
Yeah. So, would it be fair to say it's mimicking Worlds in, like, the other events?
I think that it's similar to the Worlds field in that Republic is that distant fourth. But Worlds had a lot of Rebels. And, I mean, Rebels won Worlds and was represented 25% of Day 3 and very heavily in Day 2. So I don't think Rebels was underperforming heading into BWC or even in the past few major tournaments. I think it's just maybe that people are switching over to Separatists.
Yeah. Well, I wonder if it comes from like a stagnation point of view where Like, Rebels have been around since day one, and Rebels were kind of the top dog for a long time in the old Galen Haven era and blah, 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 blah. And a lot of those combos have pretty much been run into the dirt, whereas, like, there's still things to find in GAR and CIS.
Yeah, I think CIS maybe feels like more new to players than GAR, because GAR is very formulaic right now. It's you're playing squads, or you're playing Venators, or you're doing both. And Mercy Mission's a great upgrade. We all know how it plays. And there's not a lot of tech that is open to exploration in GAR versus Separatists. You're seeing like a new archetype pop up like every day. Essentially, like, you see, like, the new one is these prov recusant lists, like what Joe Arson. Skycake is running.
Skycake, oh, yeah, okay, yeah.
He's actually about to clinch Swiss if he can just not get tabled by Sam.
Wow, I got to jinx it in the Discord and live on television.
Yeah, I'm really hexing Joe here.
Oh,
but kind of a dick move.
He tabled Louis Andre, and that is not an easy out.
No.
It's true.
I think that's a really interesting archetype, is this heavy, tanky Providence with invincible title, and you just kind of shove it at your enemy, and then you have a flanking Patriot's Fist, and it's very hard to deal with both threats at the same time.
I'm curious on the damage output of the Providence. Like, if you ignore it, can it make itself known?
I mean, with X-Rax, it's throwing essentially a Kuat front arc out the side, and if you get double arced, you're in for a bad time.
That's fair. Yeah, if it blocks in your whatever your major pieces,
and it doesn't mind blocking it, it kind of just wants to shove in there and throw EWS on whatever hole zones in threat.
Makes sense. And what about the double rec list? Are those still popular?
I'm not sure there's a double recusant list. I can send Aaron on a little scavenger hunt.
I definitely picked out the invincible Providence trend, like most, if not all. Almost all the Separatist lists have gotten invincible. It's like the new, like, you see Patriot's Fist everywhere, right? Yeah. And now, I mean, I'm shamelessly netlisting Skycake's fleet from the Western Canadian champs, and it's that invincible Providence instead of the Patriot Fist.
Yeah, and I'm very curious, because I know Larson was running his version of the Prov and the whole invincible, or sorry, thermals with EWS,
right?
And I'm curious to see like what the best double defensive retro combo ends up being once it's all shaken out of the wash, because the thermals plus minus one die is obviously good, but you know, ECM has its benefits over thermals, or like, is it worth taking blast doors for the extra haul? I'm curious.
I think it's interesting to see which admiral it gets paired with, because I think Nick Larson, Unskilled First Officer's version with the thermal EWS that he
Grievous, yeah.
He took to top eight in Worlds was a Grievous list, so he's fine dumping that brace repeatedly to cancel out multiple shots in combination with the obstruction versus
Joe runs
Martuk.
Yeah.
And Martuk is actually an admiral that is on my radar to talk about this episode, because it is tied for the second most popular admiral in the whole field right now, right with Akbar. Yeah, it looks like both are at six, and that's the next highest is five with Mahdi.
Yeah.
So I think when you're going with the Martuk style, maybe you want to make sure you survive that one important shot. And so you go ECMs and maybe even reinforce blast doors with the ECMs, where you're just like really trying to push as much damage as quickly as possible and keep your fleet on the board rather than mitigating more and more shots over the course of the game.
That's fair.
One of the questions that I always had asked was like, why this distribution, you know, why are we seeing Separatists, you know, overtaking Rebels? Why are we seeing this or that? And it's always hard to kind of pin down, because Vassal World Cup and I know the online tournaments, they feel like there's a little more room for experimenting. You know, you're not traveling, you're not invested necessarily as much in it, although, you know, it's still a super hard tournament to win and to do well in. So it's not like a cakewalk casual kind of, you know, Friday night game, but there's also, it just feels like there's some people that are just like, hey, you know, I'm just going to try this out. I'm going to try that out. I'm going to take this idea that I've been toying with and take it to a tournament and see what happens. Right. So I feel like there's, it's kind of hard to sometimes pick out the, okay, these guys are really trying and tuning and, you know, honing a concept. And these guys are like, oh, hey, I wonder how this works. I'm going to throw it in this tournament and see how it does in the pods.
Absolutely.
So the numbers are hard to read that way.
There's always been a little bit of an element of that with VWC where like VWC meta doesn't really get mirrored in any other major, especially because it's pods of regional metas.
Yeah.
And then only two of those of that pod advance. So always the Swiss stage looks really weird. And then the pods themselves are always like weird internal metas.
Yeah.
Like, I would say like the West Coast pods are really strange. Like, actually, I can look at your pod, Aaron, and like, so we've got a Doniger from Andrew Zog.
Yeah.
We've got Patrick running his typical Raddus, and then we've got one of the weirdest fleets that I've seen outbound fly, which is the Medine Liberty with double 30s.
Yeah.
So, like, you have these weird internal metas, and whatever list comes out of that pod is going to be out of place in a normal meta anyways.
Mm-hmm.
I think, according to a world's field, we would expect something a little different.
To be fair, though, I feel like Outbound ran Melee Hura during Endor, so it might just be a trying new things era.
Maybe, yeah.
That's just my two cents.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, like Aaron was saying, like you just sometimes try new things.
Yeah,
and
just have a good time.
And online tournaments are the way to do that, whether you're not committing to a plane ticket in a hotel.
Yeah.
I know that people are definitely more conservative at in-person events with their list building than they are in something like VWC.
Yeah. I'm curious what you two think in the realm of bragging rights or whatever you want to call it. What's a more prestigious win, winning like the VWC or winning say like Gen Con or something or like LVO?
Hmm.
I would say for me, winning VWC is more of an accomplished than like a 32 person in-person event, but winning a large in-person event, like I know like some of the German events had like 60 plus players or like winning worlds, that obviously is way more prestigious than winning any of the online events.
Mm-hmm.
So I think 32 player events in person can often have very skewed local metas as well, just like the pods in VWC tend to, and anyone can have a good day in that kind of event. Versus playing very consistently over, you know, 8-9 games in an online event and winning all of them to win the event is very impressive.
Yeah. I think the takeaway I get, or not takeaway, that's the wrong word, but with like online events, they kind of have a little bit of a barrier, or sorry, in-person events, they have a bit of a barrier of entry. Like a majority of people at the event travel and you have to pay your ticket to get in or this, that, and the other thing. And that's kind of like the first cut is, are you willing to pay to play or whatever the level of entry is? Whereas like with Vassal or Endor or whatever, as long as you can sign up and manage to figure out a game every week or whatever the time frame is, you're down to play.
Exactly. Yeah. And so there's sort of like the pod phase is like that, maybe that filtering that would normally happen before an in-person event even occurs. And whoever jumps out of the pods, then you're seeing more of maybe a Swiss phase from like a day one of Gen Con or whatever.
Hmm. Interesting.
I'm a comfortable bottom third level player with occasional bouts of brilliance. And by brilliance, I mean like above the halfway mark. So my perspective is going to be much, you know, like day two isn't even on my radar. But for me, something like the World Cup, because Worlds has never really been, it was close. Worlds 2020, Lexi and I had like booked our tickets and then of course 2020 happened, but
classic.
That's as close as I'd gotten to Worlds so far.
But I hear you're coming this year. Huh?
Well, he dropped it. But, oh my God, the train of thought just went away. No. So that was never even a thing, right? So for someone like me or people who maybe don't travel or can't travel to places like that, the Vassal World Cup was the next best thing where I could, you know, I played against people in my local, but actually it was the 2021 World Cup. That was the first sort of People's World Cup where Biggs just opened up to everybody. I got lucky. I got out of the pod phase. I got into the Swiss and all of a sudden I'm playing like against Green Knight and people like that. And it's like, mm-hmm. Oh, wow. You know, you're across the the country and or across the world. I mean, and you know, you've got this YouTube channel, and I was still in my bright eyed and you know, newbie kind of phase and starstruck and everything. But to me, it's like, okay, wow, this is where I could have a chance to rub shoulders with the Peter Sabers and the Arisia,
Arisia.
You know,
there's the, more than
the,
one of them.
Exactly. Right. The Arisia, the Maladors, right. Even the, yeah. even like the truthinesses and people from different parts of the world where, you know, I'm probably not going to Europe to play a World Cup or even to the East Coast to play any sort of major tournament. But, you know, so for me, like that was my world, and it was, you know, before everybody else's skill level went up and up and up, I was like, oh wow, I might have a chance at, like, you know, doing some of this. So to win that, and knowing that there's those people, and again, you know, it just like any worlds, it varies year to year who comes and who doesn't. But knowing that that field is there, and that field is from across the globe, and it's got low barrier of entry for people across the country or again across the world to get in. I don't know. There's just something special about that. I guess the sense of equality ish, if you're good enough to get in the pod phase.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, that's kind of the allure of VWC and Endor, is like, if you can't travel, this is the big event of the year.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
That's the one thing I'm very curious about. And I'm curious to hear your guys' opinions, because I've gotten a lot of different focuses on it. Obviously, like the pods, they do their time zoning, you know, to make the games easy to do. But then if you don't make it out of pods, you don't get that experience of like, oh, I live in, you know, West Coast America, and I'm playing a guy from Germany or whatever. And to me, like, that's what really brings the community together. That's that, like, global presence. And yet it's kind of denied. But well, I get it.
It's a
scheduling.
Choice. Yeah. It's a choice, though. Like, you can say, like they ask you, okay, what's your time zone? And I could say, well, I'm, you know, I'm West Coast, but hey, put me in an East Coast pod, put me in a UK pod.
Right.
And then it's on me to schedule. I mean, when I played Endor this year, and I was in a pod with Tora Samurai. So
that's, you know, true.
He was doing some time zone gymnastics there to make some of the games.
We were all
three
of us in a pod.
Oh my God. That's right. We were.
Oh, hi.
That's yeah. I didn't.
Oh, wow. Feels so long ago.
I know. I hope to do better in this one.
That's fair.
No, it's a fair point. And it's, you're right. You know, that the pods are in a way a bit of a barrier in themselves, because I need to get past two of Colin and Patrick and Zog to have a chance at playing a truthy or a PT-106 or whoever. Right. So
yeah,
absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I think that's the trade-off that you get to keep the event like a competitive event, is you have to have some sort of filter, some sort of barrier to make it competitive, and then the next phase gets even more competitive. Yeah. I think that's why Endor does that really good trade-off, where they do like the Silver League, where the second places and the third places can still play each other and get games against people from across the globe that they normally wouldn't. So, I mean, maybe a VWC Silver League is the solution, but...
So they have in the past, right? They've done the second chance.
Chance. They did last year, and I think the year before.
Yeah. I like to call it the undercut, but
the undercut.
But yeah, I mean, yeah, and actually, you know, something that I usually like to lead off the Food and Bead season with, and I can't believe I forgot this time, is just a big thank you to you know, the organizers, the TOs, Mercier, GP, Stew Bucket, and whoever else is running around behind the scenes, right? Like, it's not a trivial amount of work to do something this big across this many time zones with this many levels of, you know, pods and then Swiss and then finals and stuff. It's a lot of work, and you know, I've enjoyed the hell out of it for the past 4 years. One, two, three, four. This is the fifth year. Yeah. So, you know, huge thanks to them. Huge thanks to Biggs, you know, who started it in the first place. And I don't know if he sticks around the community so much anymore, but a big thanks to Green Knight for building and maintaining the Vassal module for.
Absolutely. I mean, that was the whole reason hundreds of players got into playing Armada was Vassal itself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I think Vassal World Cup having sort of that historical impetus behind it of having, you know, 5-6 years of play, and then Endor now having, what is it? This was its third year? Fourth year, maybe? Like, we're getting some real historical impetus behind them
Yeah.
Actually, more consecutive Endors and VWCs now than consecutive Worlds.
Yeah.
Never. So, I mean, we're going to reach a point in the community where if there's no designated Worlds from the developer, I mean, these online Worlds might become the dedicated Worlds, and then our discussion about the prestige of these events might flip.
Yeah.
Yep.
And I do want to take a point just, or take a moment to just say one thing too. No matter what we say about the events or any kind of feedback or whatever nonsense we talk about, it's all just because the event is so good, right? Like, that's why we're here talking about it. We're not telling you how to run the event or that you should immediately change pods just because people don't get to play who they want. No. It's a fantastic event. You folks do a fantastic job running it. Please keep it up.
Yeah,
absolutely. We don't have anything to nitpick if it wasn't so good.
Exactly. Yeah, right.
But yeah, I wanted to also take a second to talk maybe more about like general meta trends, because even though you're kind of agreeing that maybe that this VWC is more of an experimental one, we are definitely seeing over the latter half of 2024 and now into January of 2025, a shift in the meta that was we were kind of seeing it at Worlds. And I know Mac and I talked a lot about it when we were practicing for Worlds, of this very red dice heavy, very fortressy meta that was relying on a much smaller subset of objectives to fortress points, flexible first and second player, and play the game very differently than we had seen previously.
But just to jump on that for a second, though, that's not new. Like, red dice good has been a thing since, I don't know, forever. I think the big point, the big sticking point, is that Onager's changed. Like, what we're talking about right now was the pre-Onager meta, and now Onager has kind of went away, and we're back to the pre-Onager meta, give or take, you know, new shit.
Yeah, and but, I think the new stuff, like, we didn't before Onager's, we had, like, baby Clone Wars. No one was really playing them. And then Onagers were really, really good, and then we nerfed Onagers, and now we're seeing maybe this rise of these Separatist factions that are now more popular than Rebels in this tournament, and Gar has won events, Gar's been good, so we're seeing like this maybe post-Onager nerf, Clone Wars coming into its own, but also the sort of the return to that pre-Onager meta.
Yeah.
Let's not forget, though, that part of that is also Black Dice not as good.
Well, yes, exactly. And the whole Clone Wars thing, like, just to go back to the whole pre-post Onager thing, you don't see it anymore, but like Akbar Super Pickles were the thing, right? Were a thing. And there was all the other archetypes from back then. And there's just like cleaner, better ways to do it, or things that have superseded it. Like, for example, that Super Pickle would get torn up by Martuk. And so like Martuk just does a better job of that red range threat that's not coming from an Onager. And that's why you've got the rise of Akbar and blah, 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 blah. But then you've also got digression in the fortressing meta of, you know, Starhawk is the new Super Pickle or whatever. So it's like, the wheel is still spinning. It just has new spokes.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. And Akbar has definitely come into its own in Worlds and post-Worlds. I mean, Chris's Truthy's style of Akbar is very, very efficient with the three combat activations plus squads. And then there's also the Nova version that he's taken that is just the MC-30 and the assault frigate and a transport, and then trading the CR-90 to take a full 134, which is also very lethal.
On that note,
we're also
note,
seeing a lot less 134s.
I was going to say, on that note, you should give him the respect he's due and refer to him as First Loser.
First Loser. Or Captain America.
First Loser's better.
Maybe this will be the Worlds where we see a North American winner.
Oh my goodness.
I mean, not allowed.
We've never had a North American Worlds champion.
What?
In the post. I mean, we had Nathan Cota.
I was going to say, there's Nathan Cota. In the post. Norm. North America includes more than just America, before we get into that.
Okay, yeah. We had a North American world champion before COVID. I think of Armada post-COVID, because I'm a post-COVID.
You can say post-Clone Wars.
Post-Clone Wars. Okay, there we go. I'll correct it. Sorry to our listeners. I think of Armada only in my lived experiences, not in Max's lived experiences, and he's very defensive of his norm.
Hey, I'm just saying, I always get shit for forgetting about Europe, so, you know, I got to give you shit for forgetting about Canada.
But yes, maybe we'll actually have a North American post-COVID world winner, because the Europeans have been cleaning our clocks for a few years.
Well, maybe you just need to play better and win Worlds then.
Right?
Exactly. We tried. We tried. We lost.
So,
but I was just going to say, like, are we seeing like a true committed shift towards low squads, heavy tank builds, like all ship, or is this sort of a temporary reaction to post world meta?
In a perfect world, I'd refer back to my my season stats for the year and tell you what we've been doing up to this point. But unfortunately, life yeah. took care of that. So there isn't. I keep somewhere in my head. There's a voice saying, you know, why don't you just go back and like backfill it? You can do that. And I'm like I have this. You know, I'll do it later, right? But later never comes.
I don't know if you have 60 hours free.
Not anymore.
But is it? Go ahead.
I was going to, yeah, no, I don't have that data now. So it's unfortunate. I can't do that kind of comparison. I just like, just before we get into the squadron, that kind of side, I just wanted to say it's super encouraging to me that given what has, you know, been a fairly downer year, I think it's fair to say for the game that we're here talking about this and talking about, hey, people are trying new stuff with this and new stuff with that. And look what they're trying with this. And, you know, look at how much innovation separatists are seeing right now and just how encouraging that it is to see that you know, like, yeah, maybe the game isn't being developed anymore, but we're still developing it. Right.
Yeah.
That's true. Super cool. Absolutely. Yeah.
One data point that I wanted to talk about, there's only two instances of strategic squads in all of BWC and 60 lists.
Do you have the bid numbers on you just to kind of add some context there?
Yep. Down near the bottom.
We can find
for those of you following along at home, you can find the spreadsheet on the Marta Hub in the, what's the channel data called? Dump. The data dump?
Yeah.
Data dump.
Okay. So across 60 fleets, 80%, exactly 48 lists are 5 bid or less.
Yeah. Yep. Okay.
Only 5% go deeper than 10 points.
And I think that's
three lists.
Yeah.
And two of them are the strategic lists.
Most of the bid war has kind of ended because I think there's been a kind of a circle around of second player was kind of the thing for a long time. And I guess people are either getting away from it or they're just not caring or whatever it is. But it seems like bids have gone down, strategic's gone away. So either you're a strategic list and you give a shit or you just don't and you're somewhere in that like five or less bid.
I mean, there's a lot of lists that can crack a second player list now. Like there was a shift towards lists that could play second player very effectively and needed to be durable enough to survive a first player activation. What? And now there's a lot of lists like Raddus and Akbar that can really crack a second player list.
What happened to the agility-based second player? Like, for example, when you had Keep Away Sloan or like Sloniger or whatever, where they didn't tank per se, but they did other things and still used that second player advantage.
I'm a little biased, but I think Sloniger is still just a completely fine list. Nothing's wrong with Sloniger. But I think the more true agility base, like Runaway Sloan, the sort of the four activation CR90 with like
Kraken,
like sometimes they'll run like an FCT VCX or something, like they do shenanigans.
Mr. Blue Dice as an example, just to call out Colin there. Yeah.
Yeah. So like that kind of list, I think a big problem is it doesn't win very big.
Like you're saying, like low total score.
Low total score. Yeah. So like you'll see sixes and sevens. Sometimes they get an opponent that misplays into it, gets too greedy, and they get an 8 or a 9. But they're not tabling someone. They just don't have the damage output to table someone. And
or they're boring.
They're sometimes boring lists to fly. I mean, I know that I played some German Sloan at some local tournaments and some online tournaments. And if your opponent doesn't play with you, you have a really boring two-hour game. And then you're done, and you get your 6, and that's it. And that's not really an appealing thing when people are like committing good chunks of their day when they're busy with other things in life to sit down and play Armada. And if you know that you could waste your time and you have a low chance of getting a high enough score to make X cut, escape your pod, whatever, it's not a list that you're excited to bring to a tournament.
Mm. Yeah, it's interesting point of view. How many farm hawk-esque lists do we have in the pod phase? Do we know?
I think we have 0.
We have 0 hawks.
I wonder
there's zero dedicated farming lists.
I wonder if that's a thing with online too, because there's kind of the, you know, court of public opinion. Everyone makes fun of the Starhawk or German Sloan or Morallo or insert archetype of choice. And thus it gets kind of like a stigma to it. But then for some reason, when you fly across the world or whatever to go play spaceships in person, that stigma doesn't matter anymore.
Yeah, I mean, obviously at Worlds, no one cares what you're flying. They just care if you're beating them or not. The Ewok is running his traditional farming list, which has not really fundamentally changed in like 5 years. So I wouldn't expect it to. And then the only other VCX is actually in Patrick's Raddus.
Farm Raddus, right?
I'm sorry?
No, just dumb joke. Keep going.
So Ewok is the only true farming list, and he has an 11-point bid. And no one else has strategic except for Patrick, and Patrick doesn't even run a bit. So
I think bigger than I do.
Yeah. Yeah. Actually, Armchair's running a 405 point list.
Classic.
And so, like, I don't want to say farming is dead right now, but like, farming is certainly not a popular choice.
But then, that being said, there's still a lot of farming. Like, for example, somebody playing superior positions or whatever. It's just not the VCX style of farming that we all loathe.
Right. Like, Spike is playing his quad Pelta, and he played a very farming heavy game of, what's the yellow objective with the purple? Abandoned mining facility. Yeah. And they, I think there was a screenshot in the channel of like each of the players having like over 30 tokens.
Oh my God.
So like, farming still exists. It's just in hiding. Maybe it's not as obvious to us.
Yeah. I don't know why. It's weird. Like, abandoned mining facility doesn't feel bad the way Fire Lanes feels bad. Right.
I think you have a lot of agency in abandoned mining facility. And also it forces your fleet to take a certain flight path, which players are more like, they feel better if they are not being run away from and they can actually fly towards the enemy and shoot at them.
So correct me if I'm wrong. You were saying rebels are the least popular faction in pods right now.
Gar is far and away the least popular. So rebels are at 14, separatists are at 15, and Republic is at 8.
I have a theory on that. I think it's purely based on list diversity. Like, as you were saying, Gar kind of have been shoehorned into, there's like three viable routes. There's your Venator plus friends 134, and there's a couple different flavors of it. There's your like Anakin-esque MSU damage dealer, and then the couple flavors of that. And then there's your kind of all shippy thing. Oh, I guess then there's also Peltas.
Yeah, so there's like four archetypes.
Those are like the four archetypes, and those are kind of like the only ways you see Gar. And then Rebels have kind of fallen into the same trap, where they have very limited builds, where it's like, you've got Rogue 134, insert small ships or Gallenhaven or whatever, but it kind of feels the same. And then you've got your Akbar kind of style list, and then you've got your tanky Eggate thing, and then you've got your MSU or like double McThirties. And those tend to be like the same buckets that everything comes out of. Whereas like CIS seem to be more diverse, and then Empire, they're just kind of that faction that does everything.
Yeah, we're seeing some weird Empire lists. Like, there's some Empire MSU that's really interesting. Rasprodius has a really cool Empire MSU. Late Warning System has Empire MSU. There's just like these, like Gladiator plus Arcs, Gladiator plus Corvus plus Arcs, and then just like medium squad screen. Yeah. I don't know if they're appealing to me as a player, but there's certainly some juice to that archetype because you can keep your fleet on the table much longer.
My prediction for Worlds, and a lot of this is kind of based on vibes, but also the VWC, is I think this is going to be the year of the screen, where like the screen becomes the hot thing, like a good 80-point squadron ring, really throwing all the 134 for a loop.
It's funny you say that, because I think we have some data on the screens. Almost 30% of lists bring between 40 and 80 points of squads in the VWC.
Interesting.
And if you sort of lump that into 0 to 80 points of squadrons, that's more than half the field.
Yeah, 0 is a weird one, though. Like, all ship land, or like 0 to 40, for example. Yeah.
Yeah, so there's a lot of the...
15% of the field is 20 points or less, which is, you know, a good chunk.
Yeah, I mean, that's not even Char Tycho. That's just like a couple Zs.
Yeah.
Would you consider Char Tycho a screen, or is that like all ship and friends?
I mean, I'd say that if your screen costs less than any ship that you could possibly fit in there that's not a flotilla, yep. that's not even really a screen. That's just like an activation or a deployment.
Because Shard Tech goes like 30-odd points.
Yeah, so that's like, you cut it for a flotilla, right?
Yeah.
But it's not getting you an extra CR90. It's not even getting you a hammerhead, really.
If it can't get you a Pelta, it doesn't count.
Exactly, exactly. And Rebel Peltas are really what we want to fit into our lists these days.
That's true.
But yeah, I think we are seeing a lot of screen, and I think that pairs hand in hand with the Martuk and the Akbar being the most popular admirals.
I mean,
those are definitely fleets that want screen more than 134, and they want to really beat you with their ships because they engage so well at range.
A screen one worlds?
Screen one worlds? Yeah. Absolutely. I don't think the screen itself was the key point, but screen definitely one worlds.
Yep.
And I think we will see definitely more screen than we did last year at Worlds. I mean, last Worlds was a lot of 134. And I think a lot of those lists couldn't score big enough to consistently make cut. And if you cut some of your squads for a heavier ship, maybe you feel more comfortable going for a brawl and actually coming out. Either goes badly for you or it goes badly for them and one of you makes cut versus you kind of circle each other 6-5 and no one makes cut.
So interesting. So Empire has always been kind of an interesting case because it's got a strong line at zero squads. You know, 4 out of the 23 fleets have got no squads. 7 of the 23 fleets have got 120 plus. And then there's this nice line in the middle where almost a quarter of them have like a 40 to 60 point, you know, not quite screen.
But, and when you say squads, do you mean vultures or do you mean squads?
It's Empire, so it's.
Oh, sorry. I think it's, yeah, definitely. My bad.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
So, you know, Empire being able to kind of, you know, do decently well in multiple bands is always a neat kind of thing to see. Although, you know, the other part of that is the best friends group of Jendon, Merrick and friends. Yeah, and they're always absolutely.
Heavily. So they're always going to be the most popular faction. I mean, they just do everything. They're an iconic faction of Star Wars, so people want to play Empire. They have very flexible admirals, very flexible ships. Yeah. So I would be very surprised if they were ever underrepresented in a tournament, but definitely the go-to faction right now.
Yeah.
And we can transition a little bit. I wanted to go over some of our more specific pod results and give some congratulations to people who have made the cut so far, because we're jumping in a little over a week into the actual event. So starting off, we have currently 6 qualifiers for Swiss, including 2 pods that have already sent, or no, actually all 3 are 2 pods sending 2 through.
Nice.
So pod Adarga has sent through Backseat Admiral with him finishing his last game tonight. So he is currently in the lead with 25 tournament points, MOV of 722. From another East Coast pod, or I guess more central, is Xantos with 23 tournament points coming through from pod Bellicose. And then pod Firedrake has just about wrapped up with only 1 game left to play between Taiva and Brobafett. And that result will not affect final standings because Walker and Poldi Colonial are both going through with 21 and 20 tournament points respectively. And we have from Pod Victorum, one of the West Coast pods, which was just a drag-out dogfight, Admiral yeah. Android coming through on top with 22 tournament points flying Akbar, and then TX Honey Badger, who has recently become a California resident, coming through with 20 tournament points with a very tanky list. So those are our 6 that have gone through so far, and we have a few more on the cusp with some big wins. So like I said, Joe is a win away. Argentum is a win away. Dridden is a win away. I think that is all the ones that are standing out to me. Rasprodius is doing really well with 14 tournament points leading his pod. So we are definitely going to see a few more jump into Swiss over the next week as games start to wrap up.
Yeah, it's always it's sort of a bit of a slowish kind of start, although there's a lot of, like you said, just over half the games have been played by now, which I feel is a little bit faster than it is usual. I remember being, in the VWC's past, it kind of starts off kind of slowly. There's only a few people or a few pods that just run out and do all their games in the first weekend and done. And then they're, They're sitting back with their popcorn watching the carnage. But the last couple weeks ramp up.
Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off there. I was trying to say, I think that's because of the scheduling. If I remember correctly, it got pushed a little this year just because Endor got pushed and Christmas and the apparent up release and all that jazz. So I think normally Vassal takes place just at the end of holidays, so everyone's coming back. Whereas this year it's a little farther up.
No, it usually starts off at the beginning of January. Oh, okay, I'm crazy. Start. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. I know, it's just, I mean, you know, different people, different year, who knows, but it's yeah. So yeah, big congrats to all those people. I'm keeping an eye on Arc Welder in Pod Anyakaru. I hope that's how you pronounce that. So an interesting trend that somebody noticed, I think last year, the previous year's winner doesn't make Swiss the year after. Ah. And that goes back a few years now. So Arc Welder was our winner last year. And if you look at him, he's in Anyakaru. He's got, so my updates only go as far as last night. I don't have today's updates in here, but he's got a 5-point loss and a 7-point win so far with one game to go. And that would be
12 tournament points with two games in. So he needs a pretty solid win to get him through to Swiss. I'd say he probably needs an 8-3 probably gets him into Swiss from that position.
Yeah, lots of games still to play. So if the rest of the games are close, then it could, you know,
that's going to be a close pod.
Yeah, it's a good pod. I mean, Arc Welder, Aramil, Horngrim, and Aiden Boom or Broom all in there.
Yeah, absolutely. And the lists in there are pretty brutal too. I mean, it's a lot of Imperials in that list.
Yeah.
And I know there was a picture of Aramil and Andy playing in person because they're both Minnesota natives, and it looks like the same list. It's Imperial 134 plus an ISD and a sport ship. So and a Gozer. So like the lists in that pod are very familiar and very Empire leaning. I don't know what is Horngrim fly.
He's got a Grievous list.
Grievous list. So he's the odd one out. He's the only non-Imperial in that.
Yeah.
In that pod. And that's also another one of our heavy beatdown list. It's a Muni Providence Recusant list with a small screen. So like definitely a hard pod to get some clean wins in. So I think that will be a close one.
Yeah.
And I mean, another former VWC champion, Unskilled Versus Officer, got eliminated as well in Pod Victorum. So it's hard out here. I mean, there's some hard pods.
Totally. I'll just run through some of the results we've got so far really quick, and then I guess we'll wrap up for the night. So we mentioned Pod Adarga, Backseat Admiral, getting through. He had some really strong games against one against Truthiness, and then today's against the Red Scourge. Pod Anyakaru, we just kind of covered a bit. Pod Badi, is it Badi Dea? Badi Day?
Badi Dea?
I want to call it Bad Day. I don't know.
This is definitely a Gilad Pelion pod name.
but Roscoe Pants AU is already finished. He's only sitting on 15 points though, so he's got his fingers crossed on the rest of the results of that pod. You know, I got in the one year I got in on 15 points and a decent MOV, but it was like I was the last one in, so that's a really tough place to be sitting with all your games in the bag. Pod Bellicose, we mentioned Xantos is in. Congrats to him, Separatist representing there. Currently in second place, it's his fellow Martuk player, Zilius. So keep an eye on that one. Pod Courageous, we had PT106 winning a big, big win, 520 to 123 over Bernie. And Laugh Fuzzball had a 367.78 over Josh the Elephant. Sorry, John is somebody else. It's a different elephant. Pod Crucible. Now, there's been a lot of games in that one. I think there's three games to go. So Other Paul, or I don't even know if it is the Other Paul. There used to be somebody called the Other Paul.
There's two Pauls. At least two Pauls.
But Interceptor Paul has got one game under his belt, and that was a 7-4 loss to Rasprodius. Then Relent turned around and beat Rasprodius with his own 7-4. So a bit of flip-flop there. Relent is doing okay, actually. He's got, 12 points, I think, so far?
Yeah, an 8-4. So yeah. Definitely still in it.
Pod Dauntless. Argentum is wrecking face here. I've got victory over Pi, and I think they beat Travis as well. I don't think I've got that one in.
Yep, Travis unfortunately has lost 2 10-1s. So
yeah,
not ready for what Argentip was bringing, which is kind of this weird Sfat Venator with a carrier Pelta and then 134. People are used to sort of the carrier Ven being having less teeth, and right. The Sfat Ven makes the threat assessment a little harder when you're facing a bomber ball, but also a battleship.
Yeah, yeah, you know, it's having those multiple threats, right? That you know make your opponent make too many decisions,
too many wrong decisions.
Well, that's the hope, right?
Exactly.
Yeah, and then and Muster got a good win over Travis as well. So Travis, unfortunately, having a rough time so far. Argentum and Muster are the ones to watch out of that pod. We talked about Pod Dreadomen, Dridian doing well. I think you said he advanced. So
He will advance with a win. So
any win.
Any win.
Yeah,
any,
on 17. Win. Yeah. Yep. Yeah. So good luck to you. I remember a few years back I was really cheering for Dridian because he was flying something like 9 hammerheads.
Oh yeah, those are always fun lists.
it's like I don't know if this is good or not, but I just want it to go the distance.
Elagos Akla. What is that?
Honestly. Have some pity on the poor podcasters. Yeah, that's Garrett Kaladesh, Spike, and Taurus, you know, my Endor podmate Taurus Samurai. So I'm cheering for you, buddy. Hope you do well. I think I gave your only win out of our pot of death with these two jokers in Endor. So hope you do well in the Vassal World Cup. Spike's doing pretty well so far, though. He's on 16 after 2.
16 after 3.
Is it after 3?
Yeah. He's got a 6-6 and a 4.
Oh, okay. You mentioned Poldy and Walker in in Pod Fire Drake already.
Walker punched his ticket with a big win over Broba, actually, in their last game.
Yeah, interesting that Broba's in the, across the pond on that.
I think he was a late sign-up. There was originally a three-person pod, and he signed up late, and they put him in a Europe pod.
Well, thank you, Broba Fett. We appreciate your sacrifice, and so does Walker. There was a big game in Pod Gauntlet involving friend of the podcast Maturin and current co-host Maki.
We're skipping Fury.
Oh, did I skip Fury? I'm sorry, you guys. I totally skipped Fury.
Favoritism.
Not a whole lot going on in Fury so far.
There was a big win by Kalium, and that was a 10-1 against,
oh, is that today?
Nidimir. I think maybe
say it was Furious.
It was Furious, yeah.
Right.
And then I'll let you talk about Gauntlet.
Gauntlet, yeah. I mean, I don't know. There's not much to say. There was a game, Maki and Maturin, and I'm sure James.
I hope Maturin won.
The less I say about it, the happier Maturin will be.
Awkward.
But it was a solid thumping, Maki. A solid thumping of the good Maturin.
The good doctor.
Friend of the podcast.
435-55 to Maki.
And then over in Oriflame,
yeah.
Patrick is taking an early lead with a big win against Zog. So I mean it's Raddus, which is a very cagey list that matches up well into long range lists. Playing his Doniger, which had no squad screen. So it was actually closer than it looked. I ended up watching that game. The Liberty lived on like 2 or 3 hole.
Oh,
and
wow.
had Zog rolled any better on the last Onager shot, it would have been more like a 6-5 or a 7-4. But instead, Zog got tabled and the Onager went down without killing the Liberty.
Oh, man. That's rough.
And then a KG 6-5 against Outbound Flight.
Yeah, I've yet to get off my butt and get my game scheduled, but hopefully we can work that out, and then we'll have some reports and maybe some victories.
Well, we're taking your time away to do this, so we'd rather you on this podcast than playing games against Patrick.
Priorities.
Well, to be fair, I'm only going to have to play like 3 games tops in this tournament, and then you'll have all the time you need. So.
You get back to the podcast.
I'll get back to the podcast, and that'll be it. That's where I sit. I'm not one of the peerless ones like this pod with Dr. Blackwell, Louis Andre, Sam, and Skycake all in a pod together. And holy cow. And Skycake, so far, kind of walking away with it. He's got big wins against Louis Andre, and against Dr. Blackwell. He is poised to take a run, not only to sweep the his games, but he could take a run at the TPMOV record that Sam had in 2021.
Yeah, I mean, Sam had a perfect pod, but I think he was more like a 7, or sorry, he was like averaging like a 350 MOV. Joe is averaging over a 400 MOV right now.
So in 2021, Sam had 30 tournament points and 1,091 MOV.
Oof. Yeah, like, so that's like...
He murdered.
So that's less than 300. Wait, no.
It's 333, like 360?
360-ish. So yeah. So Joe's averaging 426 right now. So yeah,
now the thing is, and super spicy, and please, if you guys are listening, let us know when this match is, because I think everybody wants to tune in. His last game is against Sam.
Oh yeah, that's right. And somebody jinxed it a couple of times.
I'll jinx it again. Joe needs not a one. He just needs to not be tabled, and he makes cut. So wait. Joe, don't get tabled.
To be fair, even if he gets tabled, I think he's going to make the cut.
Oh, probably. Yeah.
He just needs to kill something.
Yeah.
But, kill something and leave.
Yes. But yeah, I mean, wouldn't it be something to see somebody break that record that's been there for the past 3 or 4 years?
Absolutely. He should go for it.
Yeah. And then you mentioned,
People in this podcast, specifically one, does know about the trick of killing a vulture and leaving. So.
It only happened one time.
And then Pod Victorum is already pretty much wrapped up.
Like we mentioned, it's almost already wrapped up. There's one game left. Doty and Unskilled First Officer playing for Pride. Good luck to you two. And that is the first week and a half-ish, the first 9 days, I guess, of
so I've got,
the 2025 World Cup.
I've got a thing I want to do. In lieu of a hot take.
Is this the dance?
Exactly. Yeah, this is going to be the dance. Who pick a list or a person or a list person that you want to see win it all? But you got to pick it now. Yeah.
See, okay.
And you can't pick yourself, obviously.
Damn it.
Okay.
Here, I'll start it off because I've been thinking about it for a minute. I really want to see Interceptor Paul win it with his victories. I think it would be super cool to see a victory take it all. And I think he's got the chops to do it. So that's my pick for the year.
I would love to see Joe win it because I think CIS really underrepresents at major wins, and I think it's a cool list with the Prov recusant. I think he's a great player. I would love for Joe to take it.
Fair enough.
Yeah, no, I was gonna say, I hate going last. I was gonna say,
well, you can't pick Joe now. Joe's taking. You gotta pick somebody new.
I know Joe's taken. Now I gotta unlink.
Or you, now you gotta double down that Sam's gonna 10-1 Joe, and he's not even gonna make it out of pods now.
Yeah, flip it around.
No, I think Joe is definitely making it out of pods, but I mean, I wouldn't put anything past Sam. Sam is an amazing player and a great guy. You know, I'd love to see him do well. He won 2 years ago, didn't he?
He's won a previous Vassal World Cup. I don't even know if he's got his silly hub tag yet to say that he's got that thing.
Yeah. He had the crazy run where he won LVO and VWC in like the
back
same
to back
month.
Order.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. He beat me in that. I'm thinking LVO. Never mind.
Well, thanks for playing. It was the Onager interdictor list that no one was ready for.
Oh, yeah, that stuff.
Yeah.
Okay, so we got Dark Horse of Paul. Yep. We got the, like, fan favorite of Sam, and then we got the up-and-coming rookie of Joe. Even though he's not a rookie. He's not a rookie. No. I was going to say, it's like he hasn't won a major event, winner. But he's won many major events.
He's a major winner.
So I guess he's the only... I don't know, he didn't win the Vassal World Cup, right?
Okay, yeah.
There you go.
Nope.
Yeah, he's not one.
Okay, so he's the consistent
guy.
Okay,
there's our three.
Anyway, moving along. Yep.
Interestingly, two of them are from the same pod, so we'll see how they go.
Does pod seed at all? Like, will you not play your pod mate in the first round of Swiss?
So I believe that the Swiss pairing is by final standings. So one plays 32,
so on and so forth. Yeah.
Yep.
Cool. And so you're not going to play your pod mate.
Interesting.
Yeah, I think you conceivably could buy that, but I do believe they go out of their way to make sure you are not, at least in the first round.
Yeah, so like
then gloves are off.
If it was like 14 playing 15,
yeah,
and they were the same pod, then they would just make 14 play 16 and 15 play 13.
Yeah,
nice.
They'd make them go out in the parking lot and have a fist fight, and whoever was left standing could have the higher seed.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Well, I think an excellent. Cool. Excellent start. And we will. So both Mac and I are going to be at LVO this upcoming weekend. I'm actually flying out in exactly a week. So once we are back, I think we can start our next podcast off with a little recap of that event and then launch into, hopefully we'll have another 20 or 30 games to talk about from BWC.
That being said, just because we're not away, I'm sure that Aaron will maybe say words into a mic. That's a thing. So don't count that out.
I will probably say words into a mic. We just won't have all this witty and insightful banter going on behind us. I'll still pause.
Yeah.
Where the discussion normally would happen.
Yes. Leave gaps for us. Hold space for us.
So if you're listening next week, don't fast forward those. Just fill them in your own mind with what Mackie and
I mean, be saying. Honestly, we could just get a trained monkey or literally anyone from the hub and probably be the same thing.
That replicates Mac pretty well. Yeah.
Actually, exactly. Okay. Fair enough. Yeah.
I was wondering who would be the best stand-in for Mac, and actually, now that he says that, a trained monkey is probably the closest.
This is what we should do. You know how we did the vote for Armada Mayor? We should do the vote for stand-in replacement for us next week, and it'll be a popularity contest, and you're going to get stuck with some random person from the hub, and you're going to like it, and it's going to be great.
I might.
Absolutely. So after you hear this episode, we all got to vote on who's replacing me and Jackson. It'll be great.
Oh, geez. All right. Well, thanks, guys. Thanks for joining us. Thank you for listening out there. We're super happy to be back and excited for the rest of the VWC. And we will talk to you next time.
Thanks for listening to the Food and Beat Show. If you have any feedback, feel free to reach out by email or Discord. Listen again next week for more Vassal World Cup commentary.